And it's a podcast talking about women in independent film. And I'm here talking with Donna Fisher, who is G-Mom in my micro-series Mom Squad, which I'm super happy about. And we are also announcing that Donna is a producer on the show. Yay!
Oh, my God.
Talk to you about producing, because I know you're a fine actress. And I know you're super, super funny. And I know you're getting lots and lots of people interested, which scares me. But I know you'll hang in there with me. But I just wanted to know is, and you did your own show, right? Bliss Maybe with your husband?
Yes. Well, we wrote it as a family because he was a minister, or actually still is. And it's all the funny things that have happened during that time over 17 years. So we've managed to write 12 episodes, and we're in the process of it being shopped around at the moment. That's pretty funny too.
Yeah. So did you do a pilot? Is that what you did?
Oh yeah. We filmed a pilot. We got brilliant cast. We're obviously fighting for the cast, but at the end of the day, it's the networks that will choose who can stay and who has to go at the end of the day.
Well, yeah, I mean, as a producer and you're trying to sell something, but I think the advantage of being an actor who's doing something like a pilot, mm-hmm. that is a, you know, it's an experimental pilot, is that they do get seen by those big people in Hollywood that do have the power to say yes. So you're giving them an opportunity, you know, that they may not have had on their own.
Yeah, that's true. But I became quite attached to a lot of the cast. So I'm really fighting to keep them, to be honest. Some, obviously, maybe two will have to be replaced with A-listers or B-listers. Hold on.
I mean, that's just the part of the business. I mean, you know, of course, we would like to have the people that we love and care about and the people that we work with. Because, they ventured into something with you that they may not have done otherwise. I knew you did pay the cast too. So, I mean, you're basically your obligations are kind of limited because you already paid them. That was literally your obligation.
Yeah. When you've worked on something for years and then you finally pick the people that you feel represent that character the best, and then at the end of the day you do find out that that's not what it's about sometimes, you know.
I know that you're like, now because, you know, COVID's kind of, people are starting to do things. I noticed that you've been getting a lot of calls. Is it mostly character calls or producing calls? What is it that you've been getting lots of calls for?
Well, I think what my thing is, because I've lived in Vegas for so long, I think I've managed to know a really beautiful fruit cocktail of different types of people. Some people that own businesses or actors or anything really. So when I'm on set a lot of time, or even if I'm not on set, if people generally will call me like, Donna, do you have like a restaurant? Generally will have friends that might work at a place like that or might be a manager of a place like that, so or even own a place like that. So locations seem to be really easy for me. And
it's probably because you're just so nice.
Well, I wouldn't call it that. I just feel that I've been here for so long, and you know, it's a tough one. It's like when you do favors for people, not that I never expect it in return. If you can do it, just do it, you know, without anything coming back. But like, I don't know. It's really hard to explain.
Well, I think what you're trying to say is that you do it for the love of doing it and you don't really expect anything back. But I think that when the time comes and you do need something, usually at least 90%, they're like, yeah,
yes,
let's do it.
Because
you put yourself in a position
making, It's because I love and care about that particular person and really want to see them really get where they need to be. So
right. I am so basically the big thing with you is it's really about relationships.
Yeah, intentionally tell if they're sincere and really want this and it's their passion, then I really want to help. I really want to help. And sometimes I'll go beyond that and I become like a mother to the production. And, if they don't have food, I'll make sure there's food because you got to feed everyone. So it's like a mom's checklist, really.
I kind of feel like that's the advantage of being a woman and a producer, though, is that we already know how to organize a kids yes. group. And we already know because that's what we do. And I think I know men do it, too, because my husband did a lot of stuff like that, too, yeah. with our kids. But I think that we are just, I don't know if we're the worriers or what we are, but we always want to make sure that everybody's happy and taken care of because it's in our DNA.
I agree with you there. But I mean, let's be honest about it, though, Brenda. With women, I love women, don't get me wrong. But we are like telephones, as the old joke goes. We are like a telephone. If you press the wrong button, you do get disconnected.
You have to do it based on your own relationships. And I think that's a really important subject because I think that people want to get along well. And I think everybody wants to have this, you know, kumbaya, let's help each other make film. I think we all intend to do that.
Yeah.
But then other things happen. Oh, you know, or somebody says something, or, you know, somebody says something negative. And I think the whole relationship thing is sometimes people will say negative things about other people's projects, but they're not really doing anything themselves.
Exactly.
So I always get kind of upset about that.
Yes.
I mean, I have friends that are, you know, they were in the industry and everything, but I think you can't have this whole years without attitude because we don't know where they're coming from. We don't know if it's their first project, if it's something they've always wanted to do and they never did it before.
Right.
We don't know anything about these people. And, you know, especially in our community's growing and we're starting. And the people that started from nothing are starting to become more and more professional because they're doing it. It just takes time. And there's no such thing as perfection in film work. I don't care if you're working in Hollywood. They have issues. People always say, oh, I saw that terrible thing that happened at Disney that somebody snuck in. There's no such thing as perfection. It's just art.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it takes all kinds to make a world. So, I mean, I don't think, I think the world would be a very boring place if we were all the same. So, and we all got.
Exactly.
I mean, I do believe that. But communication is key in this industry, especially. I mean, even like if someone said something and they were just joking, it might not be a joke to somebody. So talk it out. And once you've talked it out, you can be friends again. It's not, you know, it shouldn't be a big deal.
Yeah, I think, you know, we need to be more grown-ups about stuff. So I wanted to ask you, so when you got started doing all this film stuff, I wanted to know how you got started. Like, did you do it when you were younger?
Okay, so back in England, I did try to be a bit of an actress, and I don't think I really tried that hard, to be honest. I really wasn't passionate about it. And also in England, it's very expensive to live in London. So you are very busy actually working, doing a real job. And it's very hard to get within any circles in England. There really isn't an independent, well, there might be now because I don't live there anymore, but it was very hard to break in. But there was times I have done is when I've been on my way to work in the West End of London in a casino, because I used to be a casino dealer. I saw this big film set going on and all these streets were blocked off. And I went up to the director and I said, okay, sorry, I'm late. Where do you need me? And I wasn't booked for that movie at all. I was just on my way to work. And he went, you need to check in with Roger. I said, just kidding, I'm on my way to work. And I was like, oh my God, I almost got in a movie and it scared me. It really. But I used to do stuff like that all the time, just for a giggle, you know. But I was like, well.
Because they take themselves so seriously. Yeah. And of course, they've got like so many moving parts going on that they don't really know what's going on.
I just thought it was, it was just fun to do stuff like that. But I did do a few things. Like, I'd go on these, there was one actress in particular that was always at the same auditions as me. And it was Helena Bonham Carter. We all know who she is. Okay. We all know who she is. And I would look at her and be like, she's here again. And this was before she made it. This was before she, because Hamlet was her real like coming out movie. That's when she really made it. And I didn't. So I decided to move to America. And honestly, being, I'm not like a minority in America, but having a British accent set me aside. So they'd say, my biggest tip to any actor is set yourself aside, have something a little different, like my accent. They'll say, oh, do you remember the one with the British accent? In England, I had to be really creative. Like I have my friend who was a nurse. She put my arm in a cast from elbow to thumb. And so I walked into a casting and said, hi, I'm here for the casting, and held up my arm because it was also a casting. It was stupid, but it was funny. And they would remember, they'd say, oh, do you remember the girl that came in with a cast on her arm? And although it was dumb and stupid, I still made the shortlist. There was 1,000 girls that went for that job, and I got shortlisted to the last 10. I kept on getting cut back.
Yeah, I think that's super important. Like, if you're talking about actors, is they, you know, in big paying jobs, there can be a lot of people, especially if you're going for those co-star roles. Right. I know the bigger a handful of people because it's the agents for those big actors who have names, and you know, of course they always go for the money. But I think if you're going for a co-star role and you're just getting started, yes, you have to do whatever it takes to stand out, because they're going to be casting, they're going to have 100 to 1,000 girls that it look just like you.
Absolutely, because they've already put out the description of the person they're looking for. So now you've got to outshine, or just do something a little bit different that's not going to make you obnoxious. Like, I've said things like, "Oh, I need to quickly go to the bathroom," and I deliberately tuck a tiny bit of my skirt in the back of my knickers, so when I came out, I'd be looking forward and do my entire audition, but I'd say thank you. And as I turned around, my knickers would be exposed, right? So they'd all giggle and be like, oh my God, does she even know? But I'd done it on purpose. So they would go, oh, do you remember the girl that had tucked her skirt in her knickers? So the joke was on them. So I did so many silly little things like that that got me remembered. But then when I brought it to America, I just felt I didn't really need to do those things because I had a British accent, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think for casting for G-Mom for Mom Squad, you know, I didn't, you know, there was a whole different idea of what G-Mom was supposed to be. But then when you came in and there was another lady who had a British accent, and I thought, because it's a comedy, it just works so well. Mm. I mean, it just, and I think every time I look at the footage, I just go, yeah, this just, it just works. And I think you have to use what you have, and that's it. Like, you just have to use what you have. And I think when you're dealing with other people in the industry, or in any industry, really, because you don't know who it's the girl at the reception desk, you know, treat her nice. She's there all day dealing with people like you.
Yeah. So, going back to your auditions for G-Mom, when I came in, I obviously deliberately came as a hot mess. I had no makeup on. I tried to look older, but I deliberately failed on that so that you guys had a conversation afterwards, like, we've got to do something about the way she looks, right? So I knew that.
Right.
I knew that. Honestly, I set you guys up because I knew that was going to happen, see? And then when you called me back for a callback, you'd said that we love the British accent and we're doing callbacks and we have another actress that has a British accent also. So on the spot, I had to go, okay, how am I going to be better than the other actor that also has a British accent? So I needed to show you guys at the second audition how good I am at taking direction. All right, so on purpose, I engaged the director in giving me instructions and showing you that I listen. And so I think now that I've told you that, you've gone, Oh my God, we were played.
No, I don't feel that way because that's somebody who cares. I mean, so basically at the end of the day between the two actors, and the other one has a huge following, like worldwide. And so that was also an option as far as a producer's concerned, was like, well, we could get more eyeballs on it. And that's always an option, but
she's great.
At the end of the day, and she's fantastic. Yes. But I think at the end of the day, she's so busy that I don't think she would have put in the energy and the effort that needed to be done to make it work. And it wasn't her, you know, because I think she's fantastic. She is. I just think that she's just, you know, she's just really busy. And I felt like I hurt her feelings really bad, but I told her, look, before the second audition, honestly, we were going to cast her. Like, everybody talked about it. You know, there's five of us in the room, but then we decided to do a callback because we weren't completely sure. And because, and when she came back for the callback, she was not prepared. And so that was a huge thing. I mean, you need to be doubly prepared for the second audition.
Yes.
And she did, I know she's super busy. So, but it, you know, it's fine. It just wasn't meant to be. And she even said to me later that because of the content, that because of her persona, that she didn't know if she could do it.
Yeah, I mean, she's
well established. So it all worked out.
Yeah, I think she's well established. I think I adore her. I think I watch her show all the time, and I think she's amazing.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, she's brilliant. I think she interviewed Sheila twice.
So what was the first movie you were ever in?
Oh, God. Oh, was it the first? It was a movie called Firestar. It was a spaceship, and I played a character called Jane Brunsky, and that was filmed in Manchester, England. That was a long
time. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was a sexy little beast back then.
Oh, yeah, I believe it. Actor, I think being a producer, it's a totally different set of skills, but I think that as a producer, the mom side really kicks in. And so you got back into the whole industry because of your daughter, Sheila.
Yeah, I did. It was kind of weird. I mean, I've always wanted to be a mom, and I finally had my beautiful miracle, Sheila Krause. And I really wanted her to be able to read. And read and write was my number one thing. I thought if she could read and write at a young age, or read, should I say, at a young age, I felt it would give her a little head start. So we had private school for her for the first, you know, not the first year, but we paid for 1 year for her to get a hold of reading. And then we put her in regular school, and we discovered that a lot of her really good friends were really struggling to read, should I say. So I got together with a few of the mums and said, why don't we start like a little readers group and help the kids that are struggling to read, and we'll make a little circle on. And we started out with like six kids, and we put good reader, bad reader, good reader, bad reader in a circle, and gave them a play, right? And gave them characters, and they could change their voices and stuff. So what ended up happening was the good readers would help the not so good readers to learn to read during that reading circle. Anyway, within like 2 months, we were up to 27 kids doing this.
Right, and I think it, because characters, it was fun. Yeah. So
from that reader's circle, I ended up keeping a bunch of the plays in file cabinets. And then whenever Sheila would invite a friend over to have a play date, they'd go in the drawer and pick out a play and start playing, like doing the magic carpet ride and learning the lines. And I was like, wow, she really likes that. So after a few of those, I was like, I knew Jackie Bascal from years ago. I went over there, and they said Sheila was four at the time, and they were like, well, we don't usually take kids that are like under five. But then a commercial came up, and they said, oh, she'd be perfect for that. So we took her to audition for it, and she was camera shy. She just froze. She just stared at the camera, and they were like, what's your name? And she was like, she was just staring. So she wasn't ready.
Right. And
so we just kept it as a hobby, really. And then a few years down the road, we thought we'd give it another shot because she was still doing the plays and everything. And boom, she just she got lucky. She got cast for Immortal. No, we did a commercial first in North Carolina. Hold on. Oh, okay. She's telling me. We did a commercial in North Carolina first for a moving company. And then she did, we did the one of those 48-hour things with Glenn Student. And that was called Long Time Coming. And then she got cast for Immortal Wars with Joe Lujan. And really, she's just gone from there. It's been amazing.
If you were to give somebody advice about something as a producer and or an actor, what would be the best kind of advice you could give them?
My best advice for an actor is don't be afraid to be ugly. And I mean that in this sense only. Your headshot already got you the audition. Your demo reel already got you in the door. When I say getting ugly, I mean like really getting into their character. Like if you're assassinating somebody, really show that anger or that in your face. Just distort your face to show the character. Don't be afraid to go there is what I'm saying. Because people already know you're beautiful.
And for producers?
Producers, I would honestly have a checklist and I wouldn't try to take on too many responsibilities. Don't be afraid to give other people responsibilities throughout the process because there's only one of you.
Right, and you can't do anything without a team.
No. So, and you've got to really trust that the people, like if you say, make sure that the food is out at 1 o'clock, ask them to set an alarm on their phone or whatever you've got to do to make sure they remember at 1 o'clock because you can cross that off of your list. So you're passing, we call that passing the monkey in England. I don't know what you call it.
We call it passing the buck here.
Oh, no, but pass the buck is a bit more of an insult. Passing the monkey means you're sharing the same job. It's not the same meaning.
Hey, do you have a website or anything that people can get a hold of you?
No website or anything. If you need IMDb? To get a hold of me, speak. Oh, yeah, I'm on IMDb and I'm on Facebook. Yeah, you can find me. Yeah.
Well,
just my Facebook and my IMDb, really. I don't know.
No, I hear you. I haven't really done a website myself. So it's been super fun talking to you. I can't wait to share this with everybody. Is there a woman in film that you admire?
Helena Bonham Carter, because she beat me.
That's perfect.
That little cow.
Hey, you know what?
Congratulations to her, ma'am.
I'm sure. Well, it's been super fun. And this is Real Women, celebrating women in independent film. And I am celebrating Donna Fisher, who plays our G-Mom in Mom Squad. Thanks a lot, Donna.